It was announced yesterday that for the first time, scientists in Switzerland had succeeded in producing 9 atoms of antimatter. The antimatter, which existed for only 40 billionths of a second before being annihilated, was created at CERN, the European Laboratory for Particle Physics. Antimatter has long been a staple of science fiction, employed by imaginary space travelers to propel rockets and destroy aliens. But real antimatter, as it was produced this week, is something else entirely. According to Lawrence Krauss, he's a professor at Case Western University, the author of The Physics of Star Trek, a book about the science behind the TV series. We called him today to ask about the antimatter atom.
It is exactly the same as a normal atom, basically. Every elementary particle in nature has an antiparticle, which has basically got almost exactly the same properties except the opposite electric charge.
I think I understand that part of it, but still, the universe, as I read it, is made up of matter and not antimatter. Therefore, it's made up of atoms and not antiatoms.
Absolutely. In fact, that's just a historical accident, and that's one of the most amazing things in modern physics. We used to think, well, that matter is very special and antimatter doesn't exist naturally. But when you think about it, since they have the same properties, the natural condition for the universe would be for there to be equal amounts of matter and antimatter. And that would be a disaster, by the way. Because if that were the case, then as the universe evolved, all the matter would find the antimatter, assuming they were well mixed, and everything would annihilate and we'd have nothing left. There'd be no people. But what actually happens is that we believe, in fact, that for every billion particles of matter and billion particles of antimatter in the early universe, there was one extra particle of matter left over. And so what happened is the billion particles of matter annihilated with the billion particles of antimatter, producing pure radiation, and that one particle was left over of matter, couldn't find any antimatter to annihilate with, and that was left over, and that basically those particles produced everything we see in the universe today.
That leads me to this quotation from the New York Times. A scientist involved with this project in Switzerland said, "We just wanted to have fun and see if you could make anti-hydrogen." He's saying that the particles move around too fast to be able to study them. Isn't it theoretically a dangerous thing to do to make antimatter?
Oh, well, it's dangerous if you produce lots of it. You have to, as in Star Trek, have antimatter containment fields. But a single atom of antihydrogen annihilating with a single atom of hydrogen would be no more dangerous than the standard decay of any radioactive particle. So on a single particle-by-particle basis, the energies involved are small. If you had a teaspoonful of antimatter and annihilated it with a teaspoonful of matter, you'd produce an explosion which has been unrivaled in human history.
A teaspoonful?
Sure. Oh, a teaspoonful would be enough to, would probably be the equivalent of at least several hundred, if not 1,000 megaton hydrogen bomb or something like that.
And therefore, a pretty useful rocket fuel on the Starship Enterprise.
In principle, yes. Yeah, in fact, it is, as been stated, it is the most bang for your buck.
In Star Trek, correct me if I'm wrong here, they are using antimatter only for the warp drive when the ship goes scooting very quickly into outer space?
That's right. And they only use antimatter in the warp drive engines, apparently. They don't use them in the much slower impulse engines, which merely take them to half the speed of light. And they use, in fact, hydrogen fusion for that. But antimatter reactions are used in the warp drive, which is supposed to take them, in fact, faster than the speed of light.
Okay, Dr. Krauss, we're going to play a clip from the television show and ask you to deconstruct it after we hear it.
Okay.
Here we go.
Captain's log supplemental. The Enterprise spiraling down out of control. Ship's outer skin heating rapidly due to friction with planet atmosphere.
Maybe 22, 23 minutes?
Scotty, we've got 6.
Captain, you can't mix matter and antimatter. Cold. We go up on the biggest explosion.
We can balance our engines into a controlled implosion.
That's only a theory. It's never been done.
Don't you love that? It's never been done. It's only a theory. What are they talking about? They said you can't put antimatter and matter together cold. It seems to me like you can't put it together hot.
That's a true statement. You can put them together hot or cold, and they tend to make a bang either way. Unfortunately, I think what you were hearing was this part of the famous Star Trek technobabble.
The end of your chapter about this particular part, the antimatter propulsion system, says, Antimatter is the ultimate rocket propulsion technology and will surely be used if ever we carry rockets to their logical extremes. You're saying Star Trek has this exactly right.
Well, it has it pretty right. In fact, they don't use it for propulsion. The warp drives don't use propulsion. But, in fact, that's the way they can try and go faster than the speed of light. But to the extent that they use matter and antimatter as the ultimate energy of some source for a rocket, that is correct. But, indeed, if we wanted to create normal rockets, namely, which operate by propulsion, you push something out the back and the rocket moves to the front, there's no better way than matter, antimatter annihilation.
Lawrence Krauss, a physics professor at Case Western University, author of The Physics of Star Trek, he spoke to us from his office in Cleveland.